So, your son, how many kids do you have?
Two. Two boys and one girl. Three
so
kids.
So you have an old. You have a son that's my age.
Trevor.
Yeah. So you have an older son.
Yeah. Jason. Yeah.
So we'll start the question with, when did you first get involved in scouting?
My first involvement in scouting is back when I was a Cub Scout.
Okay.
I was a Bobcat, and went from Bobcat, and that's when we had Wolf, Bear, and Lion.
Yeah.
And I got Wolf, Bear, Lion.
That's
awesome. Arrow of Light, and then went from Tenderfoot all the way through the Eagle with Palm.
And was that in the area?
Burlington.
Burlington, where okay.
My hometown area is Burlington, Iowa, which is just south of here.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's in the area, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was called out in the Order of the Arrow down there, mm-hmm. at my home camp down there. And I kind of stayed with scouting. My dad was in scouting and got us boys all involved in scouting. So that's how I kind of got in. We had five boys in the family, so we were all in scouts.
So all five of you were scouts?
All five of us were scouts. That's right.
Five of the boys. Was your dad a scout as a youth?
And he was not as a youth. No, just after he got out of the war, World War II.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, he got involved in scouting then, and he heard about the program, and so he liked it, and he got us involved, and it was a great way to keep us busy. And
yeah.
He could still do outdoor activities, and he loved it.
So it was five brothers.
Well, four brothers. Yeah, five with me.
So there's five boys. Are all of you Eagle Scouts?
Four of us are.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does that other, the fifth one, do you rib him? Like
A little bit. He was the baby of the family. He only got the life.
Okay.
And you know the thing is he had all of us pulling for him for Eagle. He never got it. And I think the pressure. The more we gave him pressure, the more he bought. So
yeah,
that's a typical. You know, back at that time, I'm sure at times he might wonder if he shouldn't have done it. But hey, we did. We had a great time, and we were all in the Order of the Arrow, which was, and then. Of course, then I got involved, and then my boys were in scouting and got into the Order of Arrow. And, of course, you remember Trevor became lodge chief, section chief, went on to be a section, you know. So, yeah.
So, well, now, were you involved in scouting between the time that you became, like, where you would have aged out and then when your boys became involved?
I did age out of scouting, but I went into venturing.
Oh, okay.
And I was real active in council back there.
Yeah.
Where in the time that I was there, I even started four venture posts down there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was a go-getter for the council down there. I'm sure they were kind of sad to see me leave the council. Because I enjoyed it. I think I still do. I think that every young man should get into the scouting program because it, the leadership skills and the stuff that it has in there is just phenomenal. It building character is something else. And then the Order of the Arrow on the other side, which is where my heart really lies with the Order of the Arrow, to watch these young men go on to do what they do and to work with them. It's just I love following them and seeing where they go and how there's faith in America when you see
a different part of the OA because you've been involved at the section and national level with you.
Correct. Yeah, a lot.
What was kind of your path there? How did you get involved at that level? Like, what's the path to there?
What happened was, how I really got back involved with the Order of the Arrow was basically through Wood Badge. When I came up here I became a troop leader and I was doing all the training.
That was that troop 89
in Bettendorf. In 89 in Bettendorf, right. And originally, just before that, though, I started a troop at our church when I first got up there and got started. Mm-hmm. And we had a small troop in Northwest Davenport, and we met for a little over a year. And my assistant scoutmaster got called to active duty when the first war started in Desert Storm.
In the early 90s,
yeah. Right. And so he had to leave, and I asked all the parents. I couldn't get an assistant scoutmaster. Of course, you got to have your 2-deep leadership. And so, and I was moving at the time. And I moved from Davenport into Bettendorf. And so I found a home for every one of the boys in the troop, another troop. I took them all to visit the other troops, and they found friends that they had in it. And we had a troop treasury, and I transferred all their funds with them into the other troops. I made sure I get them all. And then my son found a troop in Bettendorf, which was 89.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, you know how you fill out those survey forms when you come in, and I put on there, and they said it was a scoutmaster.
Ooh.
And they were losing their scoutmaster. And so they wanted me to be, they kind of want to ask if I'd be the scoutmaster.
But and this was right away.
Right away. I mean, it was like meant to happen type thing. And I told them, I says, well, under one condition, I can't take over the troop on this night. I'm busy that night. Mm-hmm. Says you'd have to move your troop meetings to another night in order for me to do it. And lo and behold, the council met and they moved it. the council committees, they moved it to a different night, and I became the scoutmaster. And
wow.
And we went from 14 boys to 123 when I left. It was quite a change, and we were pretty active.
So
we
still are. Your max was 123
at the time when I was there, scoutmaster. Yeah,
we went. I think my first year on the job, I think they chartered 90. So
yeah, so we were up there. We kept up there. We got quite the routine. We had a system, and I think it works. I mean, it was. We got a lot of parent involvement, and that's a key. You know, if you can get good parent involvement to buy into the program to help out, and it doesn't, you know, it's the old saying, only 1 hour a week.
Well, it's
true, but as we all know, it's a little more than that. but they have fun doing it, and we got them trained, and that's what I. Insisted, and that's like I say, going back to how I got re-involved with it, is that I did all the training, you know, I went to Wood Badge, mm-hmm. and then when I won the Wood Badge, one of my ticket items was to really start doing the Order of the Arrow again and get back involved in the local. And then again, here came 94, and the council came to me and asked if I'd be lodge advisor for help oversee the merger. Because at that time we were merging with another lodge, which was a lot of tension, but it worked out well because, see, I came from neither one of the lodges. I came from a lodge just down the road.
Right.
So I could be neutral. And it helped, I think, because I could look at a different perspective. And that was a good perspective to be on the outside looking in and say, okay, we got to look. Because anybody that's done an MLS, we got to find the win-win situation.
Yeah.
Where's the win-win here? You know, we don't want to take sides, and they all wanted to take sides. Mine's better than this, and this is better than this. And I go, no, if yours is better than this, that means theirs is bad. So let's look where we can, and we did. I think we came out. It took a while, but we came with a real good compromise. Everybody sat in and pounded it out, and we came up with a good compromise, and we merged, and so it was a good tender for that. And then I got involved then by at the time I was. I started, you know, and they said, we want to go to MOAC. And I said, well, how would you like to work staff? And so I was invited to work staff in registration and through administration. And so I went up and I did that. And I liked it. It was a good fit for me. I would greet all the incoming lodges from all over and be their first representative to start getting them through the process of getting in. And years ago, before we had computers, a lot of it was hard copy, and it just took a little longer, the processing and stuff, and so there were people that traveled hours and hours to get there, in hot buses, or in cars with air conditioning breakdown.
Would this have been about 98?
It would have been in 96.
96.
And 94, 96. 96 was the first one. So anyway, I'd be say, okay, forget about the past now.
Yeah.
We're here. We're going to enjoy it. It's fun from here on out. Let's get you through the process. Mm-hmm. And it was great to greet them and meet them and put them through. And then I did that for a few years at a couple of MOACs in registration. And then RD Duncan came and asked me to leave the administration and come work for him. And with the activities and recreation, and he needed me over there, and so he convinced me to go there, and convinced Jim Simpson, who was the head of registration at the time, to let me go, and that I wasn't just abandoning him. But it was a good fit, and I got to do that for years there, and I've done it several years, and I've I enjoy it. I mean, I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy
so
it.
So how many NOACs is this for you coming up here? If your first one was the 96.
Yeah, so...
You had 96, 98, 2000. Mm-hmm. And you haven't missed one.
No, I haven't missed one.
So this would be your ninth.
Yeah.
Because this is my sixth.
This will be my ninth. So
yeah, this
one's
my sixth. My first one was 2002.
Yeah, and just keep going, you know. And so then, with the council, I was graced to be able to lead a couple continuants,
mm-hmm.
and I did jamborees.
Yeah,
and then I got to do a continuant for Northern Tier in there.
Yeah,
which was fun.
And a council sponsored Northern Tier trip.
Yes,
right?
Council.
Was that the one with the blue goose on the patch? Blue patch of the goose on?
Yeah, with it's a loon.
Loon, sorry.
Yeah, Northern Tier. It's a loon, yeah. Northern.
I have one of those in my collection.
Yeah, So that was that was a loon, in there. But that was the council sponsored.
You were a scoutmaster in 2001 when I went,
right?
But you weren't in 2005.
In 2005, I was a scoutmaster for Service Corps.
Yes.
With the Order of the Earl.
Yeah.
Where my heart lies. And they ask if I do that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. It's just in a heartbeat. And so in 2010, the Service Corps loaned me to Youth Services. They were trying a new process in 2010, which they did it 1 year. And then it went back to the old way. They found out why they hadn't done that before. They put all the youth in one camp, subcamp. Area and then all of them. They thought
all the youth staff.
All the youth staff.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I was for logistics to help do the procurement for that, and we found out why that wasn't always a real good idea.
Yeah.
They youth is as you understand they present some challenges, and there were some challenges the whole jamboree while we were there, but that was different, and I did that, and still got time with the Service Corps and helped them out, and on the opening shows, closing shows, mm-hmm. and stuff, I was with them and worked Service Corps and worked Youth Services, which was right next door to each other that year, and then in 2013 I was in administrative ops at the National Jamboree.
Wow.
Worked in admin and was. There again, a commissioner to do a troubleshoot, anything that needed to be covered at the last minute, put out little forest fires, as they say, or whatever things. That's what I did. I enjoyed it very, very much. It was fun to do. So, and we'll see what happens at 17.
Are you on that staff yet?
I've been tentatively kind of asked to be a commissioner in a couple subcamps and. Haven't made a firm commitment to that, but I think right after NOAC's over, we'll see.
Yeah.
My options are still there. I mean, I'm still not tattooed right in. But so it's open for, to what can happen there. So we'll see.
We'll rock and roll. So as we're going into the NOAC, this is the 100th anniversary of the Order of the Arrow.
Yes.
So not only they have a new award out, and it's only for this year, called the Centurion Award.
Mm-hmm.
And there was 8 people in our lodge that were awarded it. And it could be awarded for people at any point in service of the lodge. So over, our lodges collectively have been around since the 1930s. Mm-hmm. So it could be awarded to anybody over that span. And you're one of our 8 for that. And then also... The Distinguished Service Award, which is kind of like the OA Hall of Fame Award, you're a awardee of that as well.
Correct.
So this is kind of a big time.
I mean, a lot of people say that the DSA was long overdue, and I kept saying, well, what better year to get it on than on the 100th anniversary? I mean, It's a big honor, I guess
you can name on your fingers all the people from our lives that have gotten it before.
Right,
Matt Tarnow.
Correct.
RD. Jim Newbaum. Dan Asselson.
Yeah.
I think Kyle Tanner.
Those that are the ones.
That might be the 5 you can name on your fingers.
Yeah. I'm number 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll be number 6 in. And the other thing that's amazing, it put it in perspective too, that They started this in 1940s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1940, I think, that year. And since 1940 to date, they've only given 946 as of this year.
Total awards.
Total DSAs. Wow. So it's under 1,000.
Wow.
So,
well, you have to something. Think. You have to think of all the ones now that are no longer living, or, you know, right. What I mean, where really, as being an alive recipient of the DSA, that's a really distinguished group.
Yeah, when you stop there, that's the part that kind of really hits the reality when you say, and since the development of this award, there's less than 1,000 have achieved it, and so it is an honor. Yeah. I feel pretty humbled to be in with all these other that are getting it. It's and they keep, a lot of them say it's long overdue, and I go, well, you know, you don't get into this for the awards. The awards are a nice, you know, pat on the back or type of, but it's for the youth, and it's for, because you enjoy it. And of course, I always tell guys, you join scouting for t-shirts because every event has t-shirt, and I have tubs and tubs of t-shirts to prove it.
I think I was just telling you, I've been getting rid of t-shirts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I run a 5K almost every weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And every one of those, you get a t-shirt.
Yeah, that's
and
the...
And I'm like,
what do you do with all these? So, yeah, I told one of our friends that his wife's in the, does a lot of quilting, but he does a lot of, restores old cars. And so he asked me one day, he says, I need some rags. I got to go get some good rags. I says, I got rags for you. And I said, so don't do this. So I gave him a whole garbage bag full of these old t-shirts, right? Because I had so many of them. And he took them home and he dropped them in the back. And his wife opened the bag and looked in and says, well, what's this? And he says, well, somebody gave me all these rags so I can buff the cars worth and clean up the old cars. And she says, you can't use these for that. And he says, well, why not? He gave them to me. He says, these are way too pretty for that. Look at these designs on the deal like that. So she took them all and cut all the fronts off them, and she made me a quilt.
Oh, wow.
Out of the fronts of the t-shirt. And he had all the backs.
He got the rest of them.
He got all the rest. So, but he was happy. He got all the backs for
me. Wow, that's really cool. And that was a surprise to you. Then that happened.
Well, it was. And what's interesting is there were all the old t-shirts that RD had. Mm. And he had, so they were the big triple
sizes,
X's
yeah.
stuff. And so he had a lot. So it's got a little ticket down on the corner that's dedicated to RD Duncan. So when I go to these events, I take it and I put it on my bed. It's an RD Duncan t-shirt quilt that.
Yeah.
I could take him and show off. So.
Well, while we're, it's been brought up, let's talk a little bit about RD.
Okay.
So so you were really good friends with RD.
Yes. Yeah. Real good friends.
And so for those people who are listening who don't know him, who was RD Duncan?
RD Duncan is bigger than life. Legend is, he's somewhat next to Paul Bunyan. But this is kind of true. He was a tall man.
Yeah.
With sausages for fingers.
I remember being a youth shaking hands with him.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I have big hands.
Yeah.
hands would be like enveloped.
Well, the what he would do is he had a ring on his finger that he would take it off. And he'd always take the youth and show him, and he'd take a quarter, and you could drop a quarter through the ring hole. And it was no lie, you could.
Wow.
And it'd drop right through. That's how big his fingers were. They were just. They were huge, and he's really tall guy. But a very, he kind of reminds you of like the old, if you were a Bonanza, like I was as a kid. It's an old Western type show where they had this big guy named Hoss Cartwright that was on there, and he was a gentle giant. Well, RD was kind of like that, big gentle giant, and I remember when he hired my youngest son to be his liaison and gopher at the NOAC.
Mm-hmm.
The story is, he told him, he says, now here's your job. He says, and he was standing out of Loud Thunder Camp, right out front of the administration center, and the sun was shining, and there was a shadow behind him. And this cast a shadow, and he says, see that shadow? And he says, and Trevor said, yeah. And he says, I don't ever want to see you out of it. You stay right in that shadow, and you're right there with me. And he says, and when I sit down, you better move.
Wow.
So Trevor got to experience the be his gopher and his liaison for all the lack of stuff out there, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. So he was Central Region Chairman.
For 15 years.
15 years.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
We'll talk about legacy.
Yeah, left quite late. I traveled to a lot of banquets, a lot of dinners with him. Mm-hmm. We worked together on these national. Went to the national planning meeting for years and years together, and that's actually where he passed away.
Yeah,
was at the national planning meeting in 2006. We've mentioned this before that one of our dreams was. After he was retired, I was retired, we were going to come out and work camp together. But never did happen, although, you know, it would have been an interesting go. We would have had fun.
Well, you know, and now we have the Arne Duncan Lodge.
Yep.
It has a lot of his own personal stuff
in it. That's right.
So it'll have his awards and everything. And there's the Arne Duncan book.
Correct.
I've read through that book, and that's full of awesome stories. And even if it's one of those where even if you don't know RD, the stories
are good.
Great. Yeah, they're really great.
We've got some great things coming. Actually, shortly, there'll be a second edition of the RD book coming out, which will take the original book and expound upon it for the things that have happened since his passing.
Yeah.
Which, as you mentioned, his RD Lodge. Mm-hmm. You know, he left money in his estate to help fund this lodge out of camp, and then anything that's happened since then too, like the Central Region, because he was so involved with Central Region, the sections in the Central Region have adopted the R.D. Duncan Service Award.
Right.
And this will be written up in the book. Mm-hmm. And then he was a recipient of the Centurion Award, so yep. there'll be a piece in there on that, and anything that's happened, like I say, up to date. So we're going to add that in with some pictures and stuff on that. So, and a new cover. And which is interesting how the cover came about. There is an artist within the Central Region who was contacted by a father-son from another section, another lodge within our Central Region, who neither one of them ever knew R.D. Duncan. But they got a hold of the R.D. book, read the book, was so moved by the passages and how he with what went on in the book that they went and contacted this artist and commissioned him to do a portrait of R.D. Duncan.
Wow.
And never knowing the guy or anything, they didn't know it. So I met with the artist and got him some photos and some stories about R.D. And he put together a portrait that is really came out really well. And it will be the cover of the second edition book. Wow. And there'll be a little passage in there about that. Well, they also want to go on to do some more. They like this one so much that they're going to have him do a few more portraits. But these people I've talked with, this father-son, are going to donate the photo, the original, to the R.D. Duncan Lodge for display in the Elias.
Oh, wow.
They were moved, and talked with them. They were kicking around where they wanted to do it. Were they going to auction this portrait mm-hmm. off? Were they going to display it in a museum or whatever? And then they thought at the last minute, this is a more appropriate place for them than the R.D. Duncan Lodge.
Wow.
So hopefully, if everything gets worked out, while at NOAC, we'll have a photo session and we'll pass it, and it'll come back here to LOL Council and be placed in the R.D. Duncan Lodge.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So we're active. Things are really going.
Yeah. And you mentioned R.D. is another Centurion recipient.
Correct. He is. Yeah.
We have eight of Centurions. Four adults and four are currently adults, but they were awarded further time as a youth.
As a youth, yeah.
And the award we were able to award it posthumously. And
yeah.
So we the committee, that was the first name on the list. And they're like, well, oh, we got to give it to RD.
Oh, yeah.
So,
And what more of appropriate than RD? Because, yeah. I mean, he was... servant leadership was all over it. He was mm-hmm. all over that. He really involved with the Order of the Arrow, and he loved working with youth and getting the stuff done. So yeah, it's good. Because he was on a council board,
and
did a lot of things for scouting in this council and stuff. So yeah.
Well, Steve, what's next for you?
What's next for me? That's a good question. I'll continue to do, and like we've mentioned earlier, it'll be probably in 2017, the National Jamboree.
Yeah.
I'll be involved there, I'm sure. There'll be more. There'll be more no acts mm-hmm. coming down the way. We've got a lot of things coming here in the council. It's an exciting time to be in the Elwha Council.
Yeah.
Things in any council or any activity or any function you work with, they don't always move as fast as everybody would like them to, because there's so much red tape and mm-hmm. and things you have to go through, and you know you need to check. But we've got money, which is better than some councils.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some endowments, and we've got some grants and some things that have come about that will help us embellish our camp out here. And this, I look forward to seeing these things happen. And I think it's a great time to be involved with Elwha Council, because Loud Thunder is going to see some really neat improvements over the next couple of years. And that's great, because anytime you can embellish your program in your facilities at your camp, the more youth that came. I have to look back at my days when I was a youth and going to the camp back when I was in scouting. That's really kept me involved in scouting. I made lifetime friendships. I still look back and remember some of the times I had. My first jamboree was in 1969.
Wow.
And I went as a youth to Farragut State Park in Idaho.
Yeah.
And
that was the only time jamboree was held out in Idaho.
Yeah, it was. Well, they had a split one, Idaho and on the East Coast, the next one after that, 73. But it wasn't as big. This was the main one out there. But yeah, it was. You remember all those times. And I every once in a while, still look back at some of the people that I traveled to, and of course, they're retired now. They're getting, you know, we get back together. But those are good times.
Yeah.
Those kind of, you know, and then your trips to Philmont and your trips. I've been very fortunate that I've got to go to all the high adventure bases at that time.
Yeah.
And now I can get to go to the new one because our Bechtel, the new one.
Yes.
So I've been to Sea Base and been to Northern Tier and I've been to Philmont. And it's always an interesting thing. Boys always ask me when I go and do a talk on high adventure, and they says, which is the best? And I says, well, you're not comparing apples to oranges.
Yeah,
so apples to apples, they're apples to oranges. I says, if you like backpacking, then you gotta go to Philmont.
Right.
If you like to get out on the water and canoe, and then you gotta go to Northern Tier. If you like to scuba dive and the sail and be out on the ocean, then Northern Tier, then Sea Base is your place. But if you want to do rock climbing and rappelling and whitewater rafting, and then Bechtel is in mountain biking. They got a great mountain biking in Bechtel. And of course, I was out there involved to do the 14 miles of BMX course we put in at the summit. I was working with that program.
Oh, yeah, the Aero
Corps. Aero Corps Summit, out there. Yeah, yeah, I was there for the first and last week. I went and I did logistics and set up all the shower and plumbing and water and logistics for that, and then we got to tear it down. So
wow. And then were you part of Aero Corps 5?
Yes. In Missouri. Built a city for 1,500 people in the middle of the forest.
Yeah.
With no facilities whatsoever, had it all there. That was, by far, I would have to pick that as our best accomplishment. We did that. We as they say, I think we rocked it. We did that really well. And so,
well, Steve, I always enjoy our conversations. I always enjoy getting to talk to you. So
yeah.
I have three questions that we're going to ask you.
Okay.
First question is, what is your favorite current TV show?
My favorite current TV show, that I guess would be American Ninja Warrior. And you asked me why. Because when I was young, and young, I say that, I still think that I'm young, but when I was young, I know I could have done that. I love that kind of stuff. I was a gymnast in high school. I was a distance runner. I was track. I did all that. And I was, to toot my own horn, I was pretty buff back then.
Yeah.
I think I could have done that warrior.
You know,
though.
I try and be a distance runner.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I try to be. Which actually, I think by the time this airs, I'm doing my first fix this year.
All right.
So, I mean, I try to do about 5K every weekend. But this is the first time I've done a full, I'll do the full 7 miles.
Well, you know, if you need to stop for a break, you're welcome.
Are you live on the course, don't you?
Right on the course.
Well, if you stand out in front of your house and cheer,
just up from the turnaround.
Okay, yeah.
310.
Yeah.
As you come, as you go down the hill, I'm on the right side. As you come back up, crawling back up, I'll be on the deck.
Yeah, I'll definitely see you.
Yeah.
From time to time, I'll do a mud run. You know, and I watch the Spartan race. You know, the Spartan races.
Right.
And when I watch this Ninja Warrior show, I think there's no way I could do that. I don't even think I could jump and grab something and hold on to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think I'd fall. So no, that's not a show I watch actively. But if I turn it on, if I turn the TV on and that show is on, which I watch a lot of NBC, so sometimes a lot of times it happens. I sit and watch it. That's
I kind of enjoy watching that.
Some of the things they, because I think they kind of change up the obstacles from time to time.
They do.
Some of those are insane.
Yeah. But
they had this one.
But they're doable.
Oh yeah, this guy was crawling backwards, almost like an I-beam thing.
It was.
And it had a diagonal slant, and he's backwards. And I'm thinking that's tough. And then it went straight up.
Vertical.
And I'm like. That was the transition from going the diagonal bottom downward slant to vertical.
Then they have a 7 foot jump across to another one.
That's just,
and they're 30 feet in the air.
See, and that's my thing. I can do a thing of monkey bars. You know what I mean? But they'll mud runs. They'll do ones that are they go up and then at the halfway point they come back down, and that they're high. And my thing is, if I slip, I'm worried about hurting myself. You know what I mean? Messing up an ankle or something like that, and I don't want to do that. But just some of the things, the training that has to go into these things, and it's just, I don't know, I enjoy watching it. So, second question. If you had to start all over again, and you could do your dream job other than what you did, what would you do?
Oh. Do a whole nother job or whatever. I enjoyed what I did. I don't know that I.
Anyway, did you do? I don't know if we touched on that.
What did I? I worked for maintenance in the school system for over 30 years. I put in for retirement, and before I could retire from that one, they contacted me at the city Parks and Recreation, and I knew the employer at the city for the Parks and Rec, he was pretty involved with me. We were pretty good friends, and he knew I did a lot of the scouting stuff, and he had a perfect position for me that he wanted me. Before I could leave the one, he hired me to come over to the other with a very flexible time deal.
Yeah.
And scouting, there's a perfect example how scouting helped with that. Is it was in dealing with youth, young employment, to keep them involved, to keep them active, and to train them. And so it's just like I was working with, about 60 explorers and channeling with all this Service Corps and all this, working with the scouting was a great training base for that, because I went in and it took a couple of years, but it's a great program over there now, and I feel real good about it, and they're real flexible with letting me off when I need to do my scouting stuff.
Yeah,
that's one of the things I says, hey, I do the scouting thing and I need time off when I do, no problem. You just come over here and you take care of this. And it worked out really well. So I don't think I'd change it. I enjoy it. I enjoy working with the guys. Yeah. And talking with them and helping them. And they, I think it just works out real good. Awesome. I get as much fun out of it as they do, I think. So.
Well, then our last question. If you could meet anybody, they could be dead, alive, fictional. It could be anybody.
Sure.
And you're going to have a meal with them.
Yeah.
Who would you meet and what would you eat?
Well, it'd have to be Captain Kirk. I'd want to know about some of these trips to these other planets.
Yeah.
And that's got to be it, you know. I mean, I'm a Trekkie from way back, you know.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, in physics class, we would sit, and I don't know if any of the others are Trekkies and stuff, but they put out the books, and, you know, of course, you know, the Enterprise could travel at warp speed.
Yeah.
And we would sit up there. There was a couple of us Trekkies would sit at the top of the physics class. We had one of those. Our physics room was one of those that has the podium type, not podium, but lecture type seating in it. And I always sat in the top and the back, you know, with it up there. And but in the if you ever get a Star Trek books, the old Star Trek books, they're paperback, and you look at them. They never explained out what warp factor is the speed of light.
Yeah.
Plus so much speed, and so warp factor one, and then you always go warp factor two, but they would tell you what warp factor one was. And then they'd say warp factor 3 is this, and then 7 is this, and they would leave a gap in there. So it would be like, you know, 7 times the speed of light plus this or whatever. And so we would sit up there with our slide rules. That's back when we had to use slide rules. And I don't think anybody knows what a slide rule is these days. Speaking of, do you know what a slide rule is?
I have no idea.
Okay. A slide rule has it has numbers on it that you can do equations with by hand. It's not a calculator.
Right.
It's not your. It's like a little hand calculator. It's like the abacus of. It's the big boy abacus type thing. And we would sort of try and calculate out the different speeds in between that they left out in there. And it was fun. I mean,
The science of Star Trek is pretty tight.
Yeah.
Like, they really tried to make that show. Now, I mean, I don't know with alternate dimensions and stuff like that, but they really tried to make that show pretty scientifically sound.
I think they all did. And if you look back at the old Dick Tracy comic books, and you know, I was a comic book kid back then too. You know, the old thing, they had the communicators on there.
Yep.
We got eye watches.
Yeah.
I mean, we can do it. We can FaceTime or we can do it.
Right.
So these inventions that they came up with 80 years ago, you know, and wrote in comic books are real things today.
You know,
so your mind, you got to look outside. And that's one of the things, you get look outside the box.
There was
and go for it.
There was somebody, and I don't know if it was Tyson or maybe Carl Sagan. One of the famous scientists was interviewed, and they were talking about watching Star Trek as a kid.
Yeah.
And they said that the one thing that they did not feel was believable was the fact that the doors opened by themselves.
Yes.
You know, and then they said, now, that's on every supermarket you go into.
Yes.
The door opens by itself. And at the time, that was what they found unbelievable, was that the doors would open by themselves.
I know. These are things that they're... And, you know, if you can imagine it, you can make it.
Mm-hmm.
You can, if you really have that much power to it. And so I think that these all... For example, I mean, I don't know, everybody knows about, the Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Star Wars. You know where Star Wars, how it really came about, and it, you know, Ray Bradbury was the inventor and the director. So it was his dreams, and he took dreams and made reality out of it and put it in there. And so,
right now we have a satellite. The big story in science, but we have a satellite taking pictures of Pluto.
Yes,
and to think, Pluto, like Pluto, so. Pluto does not revolve in the same shape as the rest of our solar system, which actually sometimes Pluto is closer to us than Uranus is.
Right.
You know, so then Pluto, they had to, it takes 9 years for the satellite to drive to Pluto, going pretty fast. Pluto has a moon, Charon, or there's a, you know, there's
a couple moons. It has, I think it has 5 moons altogether.
And so, not only... they had to calculate how, like, if we launch this satellite from, you know, probably Florida, where it needs to go and where it needs to be to make sure that at this time it lines up with Pluto 9 years from now.
Right.
And now we have pictures, high-definition pictures from the surface of Pluto that we never had had ever before. And we have pictures of the moons, and...
They're fan. And do you realize, I mean, you know, there's a little tidbit, that on that team for that satellite that is headed and is taking these pictures, mm-hmm. 10 of them on that team are Eagle Scouts.
Awesome.
They're Eagle Scouts.
That's awesome.
And the reason I... Because this NOAC, I'm on the NISA at NOAC, so yeah. The Eagles, I'm with the Eagle Scouts together, and so we're inviting all the Eagle Scouts that attend NOAC, staff and contingent, to come to a show on Thursday night, and we're going to honor Eagle Scouts and challenge Eagle Scouts, and so, you know, once an Eagle, you're always an Eagle, but you need to also, we're going to challenge them to be mentors and mentor another Scout to Eagle.
Awesome.
That's our legacy,
yeah.
At the 100th year anniversary, in other words, to go in and challenge them. So we hope that we see many more Eagles down the road.
Yeah.
So.
Well, hey, we'll see you then. We'll see you at that.
Yeah.
That service. So that show.
Yep. All right. That'll be good. I look forward to seeing that too.
Hey, brother. Well, thank you for sitting down with me today. I always enjoy when I get a chance to talk to you.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you really soon.
Okay.
Oh, congratulations again on your DSA.
Yes, thank you very much. All right.
Enjoy yourself.
All right.